The following podcast is a part of RadioMisfits.com.
Welcome to Misfits Making It. We're oddballs and we're doing cool stuff. I'm your host, Lauren Lojudice. This is the podcast version of the comedy shows I host around New York City and the road, the Misfit Variety Show, and all the shows down at the Capiche Club, Misfit Comedy Space down in Little Italy. So, how's it going, 2024? What's up in your Misfit world? I just got back from Japan. Every year I go on a let's skip the holidays trip with my partner. This year was no different. It's a great time to escape because most people are busy doing other things. And so you get a chance to really get away. You don't have people emailing you about stuff during the holidays. It's pretty solid. And Japan, man, whew, it was incredible. I ate so much fish that I think I'm going to become a vegan. I mean, not all vegan, but I think I'm going to try to be 90% of the time vegan. I just feel like there's no more fish. You know, I ate so much fish. I think there's no more fish in the sea. It just reminded me, the fisheries are in trouble. And this year, I just want to do the things that I've been saying that I want to do. And I've been thinking about being vegan for a long time. And now I think I'm going to try. And I'm going to try not to be annoying about it. So don't worry. If you invite me over and you make me something, I'll probably just eat it to be polite, because wasting food is worse than being vegan, I think. Or no, I guess it wouldn't be worse than being vegan. It'd be worse than eating, than contributing to an industrial farm system. Yeah, I think that's what I mean. Okay, cool. I'm still trying to recover from jet lag. I'm waking up at 4 in the morning, let's party. So hopefully that'll go away. I got to do a little comedy when I was in Japan. That was awesome. I got to tell you guys, dudes hanging out doing comedy, it's the same internationally. It's the same experience. But they were sweet and it was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to 2024. Lots of shows on the table, tour dates for the Misfit Variety Show coming up. Super nervous about it, working my butt off to try to deal with that anxiety of putting something on tour in more of a concrete way instead of just one-offs here and there. I'm going to do it. We'll see. One thing that might be fun for you guys to think about is something I've been thinking about is this kitchen table exercise that Kimmy Caldwell has in her program that I'm doing. And it's about when you're making a decision, what voices in your head do you have speaking to you about that decision? Think about it. Because not all those voices in your head are the ones that are going to be productive. Oh my God, I have lists and next to it I put who I'm going to keep and dump. The dump pile is pretty long. So that's something I'm going to be working on. Let me know how that goes if you do it. That is an exercise to get you thinking about your creativity and how you're making decisions. And that's a perfect lead-in for our guest today, Andy J. Pizza. Now, wait, before we go into that, I want to make sure to let you know, please rate and review the podcast. Social proof is really, really important for Misfits, because Misfits trust other Misfits to know what's good. Also, to support the podcast, you could sign up at laurenloji.com to get a monthly update, or you could sponsor a podcast. We've made it accessible for individuals or small businesses to sponsor us. So go to laurenloji.com, click on listen and podcast, and contact us there. So, Andy J. Pizza, I listened to his podcast, Creative Pep Talk, and I was blown away by the depth of what he was saying and just how much creative wisdom was in there and how much he was able to share of himself through sharing about the creative process. And so I really wanted to bring him onto the show. Andy is a podcaster and also an illustrator. He is the co-author of the New York Times bestselling book, Invisible Things. He's an incredible force and a wonderful person. And I think you're going to get a lot from this interview. So let's go right to it with the interview with Andy J. Pizza. Here we are.
Hello.
Andy J. Pizza.
How's it going?
Welcome.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, welcome to Miss It's Making It.
Well, I'm excited to be here. I feel like it's in a zone that I don't always get to frequent. So thanks for thinking of me.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, it just doesn't, I feel like I spend a lot of time in the kind of visual art world.
Yeah.
I've started to, you know, I've dipped my toes into different worlds, but this just feels, I don't know, feels a little bit different. And I like that. I like because I like new things. I like the novel.
Okay.
Yeah.
We love new things here. Two clown horns for that. Well, first of all, people are going to ask me, first of all, and I'm sure you get this all the time, is your name really Andy J. Pizza?
No, it's not. And, you know, it's funny that when I made that switch on accident, which is, it's not a super interesting story, but I'll tell it anyways. I got my real last name is Miller, and I switched it on accident because I used to have a website that was andy-j-miller.com, which is just too long. And, you know, so they came out with .pizza on the internet, so you could do that. So I was like, oh, I'll just make it andyj.pizza. And that'll be really easy to say, and that'll be that. But then everyone just assumed that was my name. And so I was like, whatever, I'm not attached to Miller anyway, so I'll just roll with it.
I know someone, another guest on this podcast, her, I think her name's Kimay. People would say, hooray, Kimay. And so she made that her brand, and people know her as like, hooray, Kimay. But like, it kind of, you know, there's something about you that is pizza.
I feel that. I mean, it's very true. Like especially the first, like, I don't know, 28 years of being on the planet, I had an obsessive relationship to pizza. I don't think, you know, you never fully recover, I've heard.
Wow.
But I did get a slightly more healthy relationship to food in general. And But yeah, pizza is kind of my main
thing. Where are you located?
I'm in Columbus, Ohio.
Ah, so you don't have the New York pizza.
No, but I love New York pizza. I don't discriminate against any pizza. I like all of it. Every kind, even cheap, terrible pizza, fancy pizza, everything in between. I just enjoy it. I like the, the differences.
You're in between the Chicago deep dish and the New York.
I like
normal
that too.
Pizza. I'm going to call
but
it.
But you got
to,
I mean, the only thing I don't like about that pizza is just that it ruins your day. So for me, if you're going to eat the deep dish Chicago pizza, just do it right before you go to sleep. So the day ruining is just, you know, very short and you just enjoy it and then straight to bed. It's not good for your gut, but it is good for your enjoyment.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, there's love. So that way brings in health benefits. Well,
exactly.
I myself am sensitive to gluten. And so that would, if I eat a lot of gluten, I'll like feel almost like stoned. So that would make me be so high. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, I don't know if I quite have that, but I do have part of my evolution in my food relationship came from just wanting to feel better all the time. And I think when I eat bread of any kind, I definitely go straight into coma. Like, and I don't know. I limit it quite a bit.
Yep. So your name is Pete, Andy Pizza, but you have a growing, your relationship to pizza is getting more healthy. Maybe
it
also
is,
in relation to yourself. And how would you describe the work that you do?
I would say it's primarily about story to me. I mean, I'm an illustrator and I'm an author of kids' books and I do a podcast and I do a lot of like public speaking, live storytelling kind of stuff. And I think the through line for me is just, storytelling. And I think illustration, even when I became an illustrator, I don't feel like I really understood what it was. Because I think that most people think it's drawing, which it has something to do with drawing, but it's not just drawing. I think it's, I think illustration, the word, is really getting at metaphor, story, analogy. You're illustrating something. You know, if you tell an analogy mm-hmm. in a talk, you might say, here's an illustration. I think that's what illustration is. So I think, for me, all of it is about, trying to get other people to feel what I'm feeling about a particular thing. So I think story is a good way to mm-hmm. do it. So I'd say that's probably how I'd think of it, but I have a podcast called Creative Pep Talk, and I've done a lot of commercial illustration over the years for different clients and that kind of thing.
I've listened to your podcast and you cool. talk about the pivots you've made. Like, you know, you were like doing coaching and then you were not doing coaching. And like, how do you make those pivots? How do you know when to make them and how do you do it?
It's a great question. And I would say coaching is something that I have a weird relationship to. I think it's my favorite thing. It's maybe my favorite thing to do, but I haven't done a ton of it. I've done little spurts of it here and there, you know, mm-hmm. Maybe 2015, 2016, I did a stint of doing that. And I've also taught, you know, at the art school and whatnot mm-hmm. here. And then I did a little batch recently to promote my book, but I love doing it. I just think it's it doesn't matter. We can go into that later if you want to, but on the pivoting question, that's the thing I think about all the time. And the reason why is, I don't know what it is about my brain, but when someone goes out and gives advice or mm-hmm. if there's a self-help book or whatever, I'm really annoyed if there's not some kind of system that frames it in real situations that we find ourselves in. And so there are books out there like, there's a book called Grit. I think it's by yep. an author, Angela Duckworth. And then there's, you know, there's also books about fail fast, quit fast, never stop mm-hmm. pivoting, you know, whatever. And they're both saying, as far as I can tell, they're both saying like, this is the key to success. And for me, I don't know what it is, but I'm like, okay, which is it then? I need to know, is it pivoting all the time or is it just never give up? And so I think a lot about, for myself, I try to like find my own frameworks of how do I apply that idea? Because I'm very obsessed mm-hmm. with like really applying it. And I think for me, the best way to think about it is project-based. So I'll do a project and my commitment to it mm-hmm. is based on my degree of confidence that this is a thing worth exploring. Mm-hmm. And so two good examples of that, because I think if you have a project that has a level of commitment and you're saying, this is how much I'm committed to that thing. Mm-hmm. It's a really good mixture of both pivoting and grit. You know, and so when I started doing, I wanted to explore doing book cover illustration, mainly because uh-huh. it just looked fun. I saw people that I knew or knew of that had some success in that area, and I liked the book covers they were making, and I just thought it looked cool. And so mm-hmm. I was like, all right, I think I'd like to do that. And my commitment was something like, I'm going to do 5 book covers for books from the public domain, and we're going to turn them into posters too. And so I did the first one, and it was Moby Dick. And I was like, dude, I love this. I loved the thing that I made. I felt really excited about it. And then I posted it on the internet, and someone was like, whoa, this is great. What'd you think of the book? And I was like, am I supposed to read that? I don't really read books. I don't really read like fiction. I do now, but back then I didn't really read much fiction. And I thought, well, I'm glad I only committed to 5 of these, because that's not really my thing. And then I went and I thought maybe it will be my thing. And I read Wizard of Oz for the next one. And I was like, man, I'm just a slow reader. So I enjoyed it, but I was like, this isn't going to be realistic. And so I think that was my level of commitment. It was the right level of commitment for that project, because I clearly didn't have very much information about, is this mm-hmm. a path I want to take? Whereas a few years later, when I decided to do the podcast, that was a project that I was like, I'm going to do 100 episodes, whether anybody likes it or not. I'm doing it because I loved it. I had a real taste for podcasts, still do. It's probably my favorite medium in terms of consumption. Mm-hmm. And then I also had done a couple talks, one of which I was like, this is my favorite thing I've ever done creatively. And I wanted to create this podcast of mostly like solo episodes as like a portfolio of talks. And so mm-hmm. that was that level of confidence of like, I want to really explore this, meant that I could make a bigger bet on that thing. Yeah. And so I that's kind of how I've done it my whole career, I think.
So you're just doing like sort of a passion risk assessment.
Yeah.
And then like, I'm going to bet in terms of my time and energy and resources on that thing. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see what happens.
Exactly. And then, go ahead.
Well, when it doesn't happen, how do you react to it? See, because I ask just because I am, when it doesn't happen for me, I like deny it and then I'm sad about it and I'm distraught and I feel like, it's, you know, I'm the worst ever. So how do you feel after?
Yeah, I mean, I feel all those feelings. I feel all those. I mean, I feel all those, even if it works, I feel those feelings because that's who I'm, like that kind of artist. I'm just regular artist who's just, doesn't really matter if it worked or not. I'll find things to be upset about or, you know, bummed about or whatever. But I think for me, I also try to think of like, okay, there's multiple layers of success for any endeavor. And I think when you do a personal project, the thing that you can guarantee you will get out of it will be you crossed something off your list that is distracting you. Something that's like, what if I did do book covers or like, you know, whatever it is. And I just think, so at the very least, I always know like, well, I explored that. So that's a little bit of progress. And then I also, you know, one project I did that was a big commitment that I was really glad that I did. I mean, it changed my career really in a whole bunch of ways indirectly was this daily drawing project. I did a new character every weekday for a year. It was 260 characters, which I didn't know. There's 260 weekdays in a year, in case anybody wants to know that. But I did that whole project. And honestly, you know, the response to it, like we did a Kickstarter to screen print all of them.
Yep.
And I, you know, hustled my ass off to make it happen, and it did, but we barely got funded, which is kind of the worst case scenario mm-hmm. where you're like, this is an insane amount of work. We pledged all these different rewards, like, now we have to do it, but I don't even think people wanted it. Like, I just think, you know, they were doing me a favor or something. So we did do it, but, you know, I don't think that project was particularly successful in any outside metric. Mm-hmm. For instance, you know, as a great example of this kind of thing, because I was 7 days into that project when I got the first day where I got zero likes on that post. And I was just like, okay, ready to do, you know, 253 more of these. Like, this is going to be great.
Wow.
That project, I had gone into it really with the goal of personal creative development in terms of style and substance and just kind of trying to find the kind of artist that I wanted to be. This was like 2011. It still had a lot of like emotional up and downs, but yeah.
And then how long did it take before you started seeing some traction?
Well, I mean, so it was very indirect. So it was like, it kind of changed my creative style. And so everything, for the most part, everything I got asked to do client-wise after that had some influence from that, either them asking me directly or me approaching the project that way. But it wasn't until completely after that project that I realized that project was almost like asking myself a question of like, why am I interested mm-hmm. in these things? What is it about these symbols and ideas and all that and influences? What is it about all this stuff that I'm so obsessed with? And so it took until going completely through that project and it not really being anything to, you know, a couple, I don't know, 6-7 months later, I realized that this project is about the invisible forces in the world. And that became a project called Invisible Things, which also ended up being my first book that I have an author credit on as a picture book, and ended up getting on the New York Times. So New York Times bestsellers list. So that was kind of, but that was more than 10 years.
Wow. Later. Wow.
Yeah.
And then did you have faith that whole time? Were you like, it'll work out?
No. I mean, ahead of a lot of other successful things happen in between those two things.
Yeah.
But I knew that it had unlocked my style. I knew it did that. That was a big deal from that project on. That was a big part of my illustration practice and kind of how I got jobs and what my work looked like and what people thought about, right, you know, the work that I did. But, you know, after that, I'd got my client work going and I'd worked with a bunch of decent clients and I'd had a full kind of illustration practice. I started this podcast, Creative Pep Talk, in 2014. And that kind of took off. And so then I was doing this client illustration and doing this podcast. And that whole while I was pitching Invisible Things books about individual characters behind the scenes and trying to break into kids' books and all that, but it wasn't working. Nobody, you know, it's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be, really. And I was really stoked about this idea and this world and whatever. But I ended up, the podcast started taking off and the picture books weren't working. So a couple of years into the show, I just kind of put picture books aside and I was just like, I can't do both of these things. And this thing's working, that thing's not working. And then I think in 2018, I had just gotten sick of kind of secretly pitching all these ideas. And then also I was putting all these characters in all my work. And for me, it had this kind of conceptual emotional resonance because the idea of Invisible Things is personifying invisible forces as little characters. And I had been putting them in all my work. To me, it was really cool, but I'd put breadcrumbs out there in social media and whatever, yeah, but nobody ever seemed to know what the heck I was talking about or care. And I'd pitched it a bunch and nobody seemed to care. And so in 2018, I was like, you know what? Screw it. I guess this isn't as cool as I thought it was. And I'm just going to do a little post on Twitter and just call it a day. And that post ended up taking off. And that's what ended up getting me the book deal and all that.
What did you say in the post?
It was so, and I think there was a lot, I have a lot of like takeaways from the post, because the post was basically, I mean, it's similar to this poster that I have behind me right here. It was just a grid of the characters with the title of the property at the top. And I think, I just wrote, I like to draw invisible things, because that's something I had thought a lot about in terms of, like going to school for illustration and design. They'll always be like, you know, for your personal work and your portfolio, you should draw things that you like. And so I would look around and this person would be drawing like a pug, you know, and this person's drawing like a landscape and, you know, whatever. And I would literally just sit there and think like, everything I like, you can't see, because I just like ideas. I like, you know, that's the kind of things I like to read about and think about. And so I didn't know what to draw. That was kind of what I felt like. I don't know what to draw. So I figured out I like to draw invisible things. I kind of just stumbled into a lot of my, like, the things I collected, the influences that I appreciated. I was always kind of looking for patterns in those things. And one of the things was the personification of invisible, which is just a thing that's happened since humans were making books and writing and that kind of thing. And yeah, just like also just any kind of synesthesia, visual synesthesia of like, you know, drawing a smell or whatever. Just like, I like like a synesthetic leap of any kind always has like a kind of poetry or something. I don't remember what I was talking about.
Well, but that was just talking about like how that project took off after like 10 years of just like,
oh yeah.
And then other things happen along the way. And I think that's just so much how this happens. It's like you do the things and you don't know what's going to come of it. I guess the trick is just tricking yourself into keep going and not worrying because like it does come. And because in a way, like you're doing an illustration every weekday was kind of like it's like a great project to make yourself find yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, you know, looking back, I think of that project as, so I think creatively the number one inspiration was Fraggle Rock. Cause I'm obsessed with Fraggle Rock. But the inspiration for the project was hearing, Charles Schulz talk about Charlie Brown. Mm-hmm. And I was really inspired by this idea where he said, people would always ask him if he was Charlie Brown because, you know, he's Charles Schulz, makes sense. Charlie Brown's main character. And he would always be like, kind of, but I'm also every character. So Lucy is my funny kind of sarcastic side. Linus is my spiritual side. Mm-hmm. Snoopy's this, like that. And I think when I did that character project, that was a big part of it for me was like, I'm going to try to find who I am as a creator because I was really frustrated because I couldn't break past any of my inspiration, you know, and trends and whatever. I just couldn't, and I didn't know what to draw. I just could not figure out how to make it a little bit more me. And I kept thinking like, I don't even know who I am beyond what I like. I don't even know, like, how do you define that? Right. And so I'd heard that Charles Schulz thing, and that project was a lot of those 260 characters, not all of them, but a lot of them were like different aspects of myself trying to personify that. And it wasn't until much later that I realized that that's actually a process, pretty much is a process of active imagination that is a Jungian kind of thing.
Yeah.
Of just like externalizing the psyche and personifying it as all these different characters. So I think that
I feel that's what I do in my characters. They're all just kind of like little pieces of me that I'm trying to understand and then putting it out there. And I actually personify it in myself and see where it goes.
Yeah.
But like what you have such a articulate way of describing how you're going from one to the other. But like, how are you like staying positive through it? Because you said you had those feelings. So are you journaling? Are like, what is your process to like figure this out?
I mean, I think that the number one thing or the thing that comes to me right now is the same thing that I do on my show. And it's how one of the weird things about my show is that it's called Creative Pep Talk. And I do think that I am a positive person in a way, but it's more like I don't like saying it's a choice. I hate when people say that. It's more like, well, the thing I say about the show is just that it's Creative Pep Talk because I require so much pep talk. I require so much like seeking out anything that's not going to leave me. I think I can be very easily depressed. I probably have been clinically depressed. I mean, definitely in different times, but I just require so much. It's so much effort for me to stay positive and bright and whatever. And I think that for me, one of the things that keeps me going, and it's what every episode of the show is based on, is a new idea that kind of gives me actionable things I can do to improve my scenario. I live and die on that. So every episode, that's just what I'm doing is like, oh, this is a thing. I think it makes sense. Like, I think I think as soon as you are in a scenario or chasing something, which becomes like trying to force yourself to win the lottery. Like that's a no-win situation. And when you know that, what's going to get you out of bed in the morning? Nothing. If you think all the effort I make, nothing, it doesn't make a difference. Of course you're depressed. Like I think for me, it's not a natural thing. It's not, I don't have a natural optimism, almost at all. I have, but I am pretty voracious in seeking out frameworks, ideas, patterns, things that convince mm-hmm. me that if I do this, it might lead towards a better situation or a better outcome or something, you know, desirable. So I think the whole way through, I'll say this other bit. I think that the only difference maybe there that maybe is different about me, but not innately, just something that I think I developed over time is the growth mindset, which I think is I feel like a lot of people talk about that, but I think it's underappreciated because I think it's so nearly impossible to internalize, especially for creative people who are so emotional, prone to, you know, spiritualizing everything, prone to think it's all about talent or luck, two things that are out of your control. Those are both fixed mindset things. So I think at some point, I think in my early 20s or late teens, I think I realized like, oh, there's a way, like most things that I want to do, there's a way I can figure out how I need to do them. And I think that mindset is meant that I'm constantly seeking out. Like if there's something mm-hmm. I want to do, I'm trying to find like the eating thing. So I don't feel like I have not mastered food in any way. I love food. I'm from the Midwest, come from a long line of food addicts and food lovers and whatever. But I do think like I was very obsessed with figuring out what strategy is going to work for me until I found one. And so, yeah.
And then a creative pep talk, how much is off the cuff and how much is that?
Not very much at all. Not very much at all. And it's, you know, I don't know, in a way it's like, so most episodes, at least up to this point, probably about 2/3 of the episodes are solo episodes. I think that it's both, it's my desire that they would feel very off the cuff, because I think I don't like it. I don't like the way it sounds when people are reading. Yep. It just doesn't sound good to me. But it also, I feel mixed feelings about the fact that most people would assume that it's not written because I work really hard at it. I think that's part of it. I work really hard at it, writing wise and developing the work. And then I also try really hard to make it not sound like I'm reading it. Cause I'm usually not reading it verbatim, but, anyway, I would say it's a mixture, but it's a lot of work.
And it sounds very well thought out. Like each one, like you're saying, it's a library of talks. Thanks. It really is. So how long does it take you to create one?
So I would say that, I have a few different, over the years, and I'm a real optimizer for better or worse. Like I obsessively think about the process of making even these episodes. I've been doing this for 9 years. I'm still constantly thinking like, oh, this, I could do it this way. I don't know. So I'm always evolving the process, but I have several kind of pillars of how I do it. So some of them are less time than others, but if it's a classic kind of episode of like, this is what I think the podcast is, that usually takes, I'm usually writing for like 30, 45 minutes to an hour, 5 days a week in the morning. And I would say most of that is an episode. That's probably, it's not always that, but a lot of times it is.
Wow. I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, that's a lot of work into the podcast. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't know if it's really the right thing to do at this point. I've been thinking about doing it differently, but I think it has served the show.
I mean,
well,
that's why it's so good.
Point.
That's why it's a standout. I mean, the work shows in itself. And I love what you said too about the growth mindset, because I think that's something I had to train myself out of growing up in a working class background. It was like, if you need to, like, you go to school and then you get a job and you don't ever like get better again. And just seeing, like, I study with this French clown master Philippe Gallier. It's more like Borat style clown than like circus clown.
I mean, I don't know very much about, is it called clowning? I don't know what it is, but I don't know much about it, but the little that I do know, I love. So I love.
Yeah. And it's all about, accessing that inner creative and fucking all of the restrictions that are put on it. And when I love going, because everyone has a growth mindset. There was this woman, she was a famous actress in Japan, and she had to leave in the middle to go to do a movie. But to her, she's still going back to learn. Like, there were people with Netflix specials and everyone's in the room. I go because it's so refreshing and like, and just healing to be like, no, like, growing is the thing.
Yeah.
That's, and being around that. And that brings me to Koloop.
Yeah.
Because Koloop, which we'll get to, you could describe a little more what that is. Sure. But I want to say first that, like, what a beautiful collection of people who are like all on the same wavelength.
Yeah. Yeah.
And being like, it seems seemingly from the outside, like positive and creative and growth mindset oriented.
Yeah, so, it is.
First of all, tell us about Koloop, and then like, how did you find each other? It's so wonderful. Yeah, I mean, jealous of all of you.
Well, thanks. I currently so Koloop, what it is, it's an artist management company. I co-founded it with my agent who is representing me prior at a previous agency. And then I basically helped him launch this. I recently, at the beginning of the year, I stepped away as co-owner because I just wanted to close some tabs in my brain. And so I'm still an artist in the group, but I just didn't. And I wasn't super in the day-to-day like management anyway, but I just, there's something I've realized, like, I can't remember what it's called, but I heard about it again on TikTok. And then I've heard it in a few different contexts. Like, have you heard of that study they did with wait staff where they're like, if they have an open tab, they can remember everything that person ordered, you know, like the people that will take an order and they don't have to write it down, like that kind of thing. If it's open, that's, they can remember all of it. And as soon as they pay, they can't remember any of it. And so that is a perfect illustration of what it feels like to have too many projects and so for me, that was Koloop. I just, even though I wasn't working on it every single day, it was just an open tab. I was just like, I kept expending all this kind of like background. It's like having an app open in your brain, you know?
Yeah.
And so I stepped away from like co-running it, but I basically helped Ryan, my agent, start it because he had a different philosophy on what representation looks like in 2023, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just thought, I know a handful of people that could use this, and they were people that were friendly acquaintances and colleagues. And they were all people that not just shared kind of growth mindset, but also a collaborative mindset, you know, an idea that by helping you, it doesn't hurt me. It's not all, you know, it's not a zero sum game kind of thing. People like Morgan Harper Nichols and Lisa Congdon and a whole bunch of other great people. It's been really great to, and also, you know, there are people that I've had on my show at different times. And I actually think, I don't know how you feel about this, but the interviewing process, I feel like it's just one of the most, I mean, it took me a long time to feel this way, because for a long time, I just felt like it was really difficult, like really, really difficult on so many levels. But now I just see it like I get to have coffee with some of the coolest people on the planet, and it always has a massive impact on me.
And that's how you met them.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was just through a bunch of circumstances. I think, you know, they're all different, but I think I'm a big, big believer in, you know, whatever you're trying to do, you need to get around people that are doing that. And I think, I know the research is all there too, but I experienced that firsthand in the most dramatic way. When I went to college and I was studying illustration, the day that the illustrator came, there was an outside illustrator that was practicing and like has amazing work. His name's Lee Ford. You're not going to find much on him now. I don't know. I think he's mainly just kind of teaching and doing different things, but his work's awesome. I love his work. And he came and did a presentation, and that was the day I became an illustrator, because I was just like, I can do this. I know. And the next day we started this like zine that was a published little magazine thing, and created this website, and we got copies sent all over the world that people were interested in, and that's how we got our first jobs. And it was literally just like that. I just think there's something so mysterious and mystical about getting around people. And so when it took me forever to do it because it's expensive and it's difficult to do, but going to illustration conferences, going in and being uncomfortable in these kinds of situations and events, mm-hmm. and talking to people, that's how I met a handful of them. And then, I think some of them were, I think a couple maybe listened to the podcast, or we connected on Instagram or whatever, but
right.
Yeah, I think it was just over time. You'll do kind of collect like-minded people. If you get
What are your advice or tips on? So you meet you're around the people, then, you know, creatives, we're so busy and we could be in our silos so much. How do you like create a community, keep in touch? What's your tips on that?
Yeah. I mean, I want to say, first of all, that I think that, I think at certain times in my career, I've been really, really good at that. And then other times, not so much. And I feel like right now, that as I go to answer that question, I have to have the, I just have this I have an obsession with, I even don't want to say that because it sounds bad, but I have an obsession with, I really want to be a good person, like to a point that is ridiculous. It probably hurts me in plenty of ways. So I'm trying to be extremely honest. And I just think, like, right now, that's probably the thing that I'm brainstorming how to fix, because I feel like I have, over the past few years, just kind of isolated myself. And I think that's probably a lot of global stuff and all that kind of thing too. Yeah. But, I've kind of gotten to a weird rut with that. But, I think that one of the things, honestly, I know I've said this like 8 times this episode of this show, but I would say, forget all of that crap that I said. Listen to this. This is, I think the number one thing is collaborating. I think you have to collaborate. I think it's, especially if you're trying to do this as a career, like there's nothing, and the collaborations don't even have to be good. They have to be fun. Just make them fun. Make it with people that are not even ahead of you. They don't have to be anywhere further ahead, just exactly where you are. I could tell you 10 things of the value of nobody's, you know, the least inspiring scenario is nobody's asking you to make anything. You're not even sure anybody wants you to do that. Like, it's very hard to do. And so it's even harder to have the guts to be like, maybe let's both do this together. And, but my entire career, I feel like, is based on collaborations. And so for me, find something that you can do that is value to you and them, which means you don't have to go reach out to the biggest stars in your various fields and do some breakthrough thing. That never even helps that much anyway, honestly. Like, you're not in their league, you're not in their crew, you're not in their scene. It's never going to be some, like, I just haven't had hardly any experiences where that was like a game changer. Like I've had a handful of, I've had a couple celebrities on my show. Like those aren't people's favorite episodes. I love that experience, but it's not.
Yeah.
That's not what the show is. The best episodes of the show are when I'm talking to somebody who's in a similar world to me or struggling with similar things. And sometimes they're further in the path than I am. And sometimes they're maybe not as, you know, far into it. But yeah, that's what I would say is collaborate, find peers. I think everybody's so, and the only reason I can speak to this is because this was me, because I'm a normal person. Like when I started, all your dreams are, I want to work with that person. I want to be at, you know, whatever. But the coolest thing is like, literally the coolest thing is when you listen to, I was listening to Chevy Chase on Marc Maron, and mainly because I just thought, what the heck is this going to be like? And it was whatever that is. It's just, it's a heck of an, I don't even know what that episode was, but what's great, even though I don't know how I feel about him or anything, like he, I'm not even gonna speak to it, but the cool thing is to listen to him talk about when they were starting and these random people that are around that end up being Steely Dan and Martin Short and like all the, you know, all these things, like people really undervalue the people around them. And if you're a creator, you probably have, you might not have good taste, but you have taste. You have a very particular kind of like, this is what I like. Look around for the people that nobody else is appreciating that are doing really cool stuff, and then go connect with them.
Oh, sorry. That was a boo. I meant this. No, continue.
Bro, I hate that advice. No. I would have loved it. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, but go connect to them. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Fuck yeah. No, you know, there's people like in the comedy world, there's people who hang around certain institutions and they're just always looking over your shoulder. And I'm like, you've only told me that I don't want to know you, that this is how 100%. You treat people. Like you're not, this is not, I remember once I was in LA, I was very tired, jet lag. And I introduced myself to someone and they asked me, what are your credits?
Oh my God.
I was like, and I was so tired. I went, I don't talk to people that way.
Ugh.
That's what I told him. And then
puke,
right? Like, I just wanted to, like, the thing is, when you meet people who are super, as an artist, astronomically like producing, and I don't want to say successful, as like there's lots of whatever that means, first of all, and second, there's lots of people who are quote unquote commercially successful who I am not talking and don't necessarily have that artistic drive. Not just good business people. I'm talking about like the artists that are like producing at such like intense, high energy frequencies. Like those people don't give a fuck about your credits, about where you've been. They just want to know, who are you as a creator? And I wish people would know that more and just focus on you as an artist and stop with the bullshit.
Yep, 100%. I think the further I've gone in that journey, the more I've doubled down on that, to the point where there's a lot of people that are maybe creatively interesting or have done things that interest me, and if they're just a shitty person, I'm not interested in them as a person. I don't want to work with them. I don't want to collaborate with them. And I think you should be really just brutal about not working with terrible people in terms of what you can control. You can't really control that if you're on a job or something.
Totally. Yeah, two clown horns to that. So now we go into, we have, every time we do this podcast, we always ask the question, what your misfit moment was, the moment you knew that the traditional life was not for you.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, all kids and teenagers think, oh, they'll go get a job and it'll just like make sense when you're doing it. And I think I probably had a little bit of that of like, okay, if I go get a job, I'll figure it out on the job. But I also, even from when I was little, I knew like, man, I'm looking around at people at school, people at you know, at home and in these other houses and everything, and they're going about doing all this stuff. And I'm just like, I don't think I can do any of this stuff. I remember the one thing that always sticks out in my mind is just thinking about something like, how does anybody have Band-Aids in their house? Like, how could you operate in such a way as a human where you're remembering that level of detail? I remember thinking, like, stressing about, how am I going to do this? Like, I can't do it. And so that was probably the first thing. But then fast forward, because I thought, well, but I'll figure it out, whatever. And then I remember, I got a job at the movie theater. And I always joke, like, I did that. Everybody that works at the movie theater did that because they're like, I love movies. Turns out that has nothing to do with it. You're not watching movies. You're not doing anything like that. You're just counting money and picking up popcorn and whatever. I remember working as a cashier, and like the first time my boss counted my drawer down at the end of the night, and they were like, okay, yeah, you're off $23.50. And I was like, what? How could that be? Like, it tells you what change to give and everything. And then that probably was like, that was concerning, and I was upset and I felt embarrassed. But then when it happened, like, you know, 30 other times, I thought, I can't even do the most basic job that there is. Like, I'm in deep trouble. And so I think that was probably the thing.
The change in the drawer.
Yeah. Comes to mind.
And we also ask what your misfit inspiration is. Misspiration, if you will.
Very magical. What does that mean?
It's very magical. When you're in the lulls, what are some things you do to get yourself out?
Yeah. So that's a great question. I think that I have such mixed feelings about this in myself, but I do think, like probably a lot of creative people, I am very prone to spiritualizing, overlaying a spiritual kind of, framework over life and what's happening and, you know, that kind of thing. And so I'm not ashamed or embarrassed. The only reason I have mixed feelings about it is because sometimes I think that overly spiritual or superstitious attitude is something that really gets in the way of creative people for kinds of different ways. That's why on the podcast I don't talk about spirituality hardly at all. Whereas, you know, a lot of people on the internet, especially people in the creative world, and even historically, you know, the different kind of creative books and things like that, spirituality usually plays a huge role, which is kind of bizarre that it's a huge role in my life, but I don't put almost any of that into my work. I would say that probably the thing that happens if I feel like I'm really off course, or I'm feeling, the other thing that I think a lot about is like, when it comes to the over-spiritualizing of the creative path, one of the ways I think that manifests is essentially what Stephen Pressfield's book is about, which is the resistance. I think it's like when I don't know if you feel like this, but I feel like there's something in my brain that's like, if this is the right path, it should be easy. Doors should just be opening, whatever. And I think that it's more nuanced than this, but I've just noticed looking back that it served me well to not run when there is resistance. Like when I think of it, I've talked about it on the show, like if there's no booby traps, there's no treasure. Like, there has to be wilderness. You have to be going into territory that's not easy, difficult, pushing you, pushing the audience, whatever. You have to be going there to get anywhere interesting. Otherwise, like, all the loot is gone. because people already set off all the booby traps and paved the path and set up alongside of it and sold you products to make it easier. Like you have to get used to it. So if I hit that kind of resistance and I'm feeling either like, am I on the right path? Am I not? I do think I go to spirituality. I go into, I kind of try to think of like one example of this, is when a couple of years ago, I was feeling really like, I don't know what I'm doing. I feel like I feel really lost. And, what I would do is just say, well, when was the last time that I felt like right on the heels of my potential and felt like, whoa, this is like magical. There's something, you know, and I just kind of thought back and it was like, okay, it was about a year and a half ago. And it was this conversation. What did that person tell me? Like, oh, they were telling me about this podcast, This Jungian Life. And so I was like, well, maybe I should listen to that. And so I started listening to that and then it became my fuel for 2 years. And so I think that's what I do. I mean, I don't know if it's good advice or not, but that's what I do. Yeah.
I love that. I think it's great. I think it's great. That gets
every time.
All right. So now I have a question for one of my characters. Okay. She hasn't been here in a while. I haven't made any videos of her. She's just like an entity in me. I ended pizza. How's it going? I'm Donna Disney. I had to write down my question because I just forget sometimes. I get up very early. This is kind of like even my nighttime because I get up at 5:30 every day, and I walk to the Dunkin' Donuts and I get my coffee. I get a drip coffee. I get it with half and half, 3/4 to the top, and then the half and the half. I know my doctor tells me it's not good, but the thing is, I enjoy it very much. It goes so well with the Boston cream. You can't have regular milk with the Boston cream. To have oat milk is criminal. So, I have my routines, and I have my Disney memorabilia collection, and I want to be able to communicate that to the world. I find there's glory in the routine and the caring about little figurines.
Yeah, like Disney figurines.
Oh yes, I have the plates too. You know, the commemorative plates.
Do you eat off of them?
You hang them on the floor, on the wall, and
okay. You can't.
You don't
eat
have
off
commemorative
that, no.
plates.
I have one.
Wow.
But it's in a box.
Wow, you're provoking my asthma. Okay, all right. So, so Andy, what do you suggest? I need a creative pep talk.
What do you do with your passion?
Well, how do I communicate? I feel like there's some value. How do I communicate?
Your value is in, you're saying you have value in the fact that you love commemorative Disney trinkets.
Trinkets is a derogatory term, I feel.
Okay, sorry. Memorabilia. That's what I meant to say. I'll tell you. I think that the number one thing is you got to find your people. I'm sure there are people that feel exactly like you. And what I would even recommend is try to get, don't just leave it at, I feel this way. You need to tap into the taste of why does it make you feel this way? What is this a symbol of?
Joy.
Joy is, okay, we need to go further than that. It can't just be joy because everybody means different things with joy. You need to come up with, we need to find like, what is the, what does this represent for you on a personal level? Why is it your elixir on your hero's journey? You went out into the world, it was a bad scenario, and then this thing showed up in your life and it gave you something. What was it?
Well, I do go out in the world because I'm there for all the premieres. The day it drops, I'm at the Disney store at 7:30. They open at 8 and I'm there with my lawn chair. Oof. I got my lawn chair. I got my coffee. I put
my
coffee in the thermos and I get on the A train by Rockaway Boulevard. So
what's your thermos got on it?
It's got a Figment.
Oh, I love Figment. That was my favorite.
Figment is so on.
Now we can bond it's over my, that. So this Figment. Is,
it's the misunderstood. You understand? Like, no one cares about the little figurines. It gives me joy and hope and magic that, you know, I live under in a little apartment underneath the Rockaway Boulevard elevated train. And, you know, it's not the most glamorous, but when I look at those Disney memorabilia, I think, yeah, life can be magical.
I can relate to that in some fragmented scenario. I mean, I've got a lot of memorabilia right here, so I can relate.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe you need a podcast. That seems like it's been fine for me.
Yeah, I could just talk about, like, here, this is a Tinkerbell trinket. It's from 1988. Peter Pan, new edition, extra color in the Technicolor. Yeah, I like that. And it's a different color green than the other, the first edition. And
A lot of people miss that bit.
They should pay attention to details. They're important.
Yeah, they really should.
Well, if you're ever around Rockaway Boulevard in New York, in Queens, at 5:55 a.m., I'll be there. Come hang out.
Okay.
We can have a donut together. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Donna?
Donna Disney. I got it legally changed.
What a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much.
What a pleasure.
Wow, Donna really likes you.
I love it. She's I like her. I think she's coming along. I actually wish that I had, I think a lot of creators probably feel this way, where you just have all these different aspects of yourself creatively that you wish you had. I think that's why I liked what's that? Everything Everywhere All at Once, is I think that's how I feel. I feel like there's all these other lives. I could have picked these different things. And I definitely, characters is always been really attractive to me. I spent probably half of my college years in character. And it's, I don't know. It's such a, I don't know if you feel like this, but it's such a mental relief.
Oof, yeah. Oh my God. And I pick characters that help me, like Martha Stewart. I love, cause she's just so solid in herself in this way that she just feels she can express herself without feeling like, you know, that she says what she wants and goes after it and doesn't, and also pivots without any sort of guilt. She just, no, this didn't work. Let's do this. And she, I pick, and it is a relief. It's something that I need to work on. So that works for myself. And, you know, I get in trouble. Like, I know what you mean with like just loving the character. Like, I get in trouble where I am just so invested in the person. I know about Donna, like where she lives and everything. Yes. I'm so invested in the person. What's funny about her is besides the point. I just think it's fun to be her.
I think that's, but I also, I mean, I'm not an authority on comedy, but I do think that that's the funniest thing, is just if you can just be sincere in the whatever the weirdest, you know, kind of thing that you came up with is.
I guess.
I love it. I hope in my future there's space for that, because I love being in character. It's, and maybe it's just a catharsis. Like, maybe it doesn't have to be monetized, but I still love being in character.
All right. Well, let me know when you need help getting embodying. I can help lead you through a Zoom. Well, cool. Tell people where we can come find you, Andy Pizza.
I would say Instagram at Andy J Pizza, or on my podcast, Creative Pep Talk. Those are probably my two best bets.
Heck yeah. All right, great. Well, thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Well, there you have it. You can follow the podcast on my page at Lauren Logie. Updates and inside info on my email list, LaurenLogie.com. Thank you to Annie McCutcheon for editing, Edward Silla at Radio Misfits Podcast Network, and Maddie McLennan for making the podcast art. Thanks to our listeners for bringing us back for another season. We'll see you soon.
The preceding was a presentation of the Radio Misfits Podcast Network. Find our other great shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at RadioMisfits.com. Thank you.